The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes? There comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The Essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards, and you're tuned into The Essentials, The Reset. As usual, we're going to have ourselves a wonderful conversation. We're going to talk about a little bit of this and a little bit of that this evening. Nothing too structured. Want to touch a little bit on the Olympics, even though it's been a while. I have not been here live since then. So just want to touch just a bit on that. Talk somewhat about this issue of bank reform and in a wider way, reforms which are required in the country. And to kind of ask ourselves the question whether or not we are having the right conversation or the way we are going about it. Not a question of who is right or who is wrong, not necessarily have any interest in getting into the back and forth which has been taking place, but to use it really as a platform for asking ourselves some question as to whether or not there's a way of redirecting, how do we get to the place where we are comfortable, that the systems of the economy, and the bank is one very important element thereof, they're working in the interest of the country. And if they're not working in the interest of the country, then what? And so we want to ask ourselves a few questions around that. I want to talk a little bit about problem definition and the extent to which we are predisposed to accepting truths, accepting issues which are sometimes very obvious. And in the process of doing that, whether or not we are not causing ourselves problems by not properly defining the problems that we need to solve. So those are basically the broad areas that we want to discuss this evening. Want to invite you to join us. The numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. Our text line is 422-4796, 422-4796. I'm sure you have some input on some of these issues. Certainly, you must have a point on the Olympics. How did it go? How do you think the Bahamas performance was? This was like the first Olympics since 1992 when the Bahamas did not get a medal. But, you know, what are your thoughts? We're not getting into anything controversial. We just want to look at the Olympics in a general way and ask ourselves couple of questions. You know, were there any lessons that we took from that particular event? Fantastic event it was. Didn't get to watch a whole lot of it. I'm mostly into track and field. Got to watch the races I wanted to see, but you know, there was enough social media, enough Facebook, enough texts and stuff coming through various groups that kept you up to date. You just couldn't say you missed it, even if you missed the actual watching via TV. So what are your thoughts on that? And then when we get to talking about bank reforms, do you have a view? Do you maybe even have a side? There have been discussions between, well, there have been proposals from one entity, and there's been feedback from other entities. And the question is, which side are you leaning to? What are your views? Do you think A is right versus B? Do you think neither A nor B is right? How do you see this? How important is this particular issue to the progression of the country? And why are some of the things that we are seeing at this point in time, why are they happening? Why is it that we are where we are talking about fees? And so we want to invite you, entreat you to join us. We're going to take ourselves a very quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to get right into our discussion, maybe a monologue, but just have some thoughts I want to share on the Olympics. You're listening to The Essentials, The Reset. Don't move. Come right back.
Baby, can't you see I lost my strength and my energy? What I need? Gin and coconut water, jelly, gin and coconut water. Gin and coconut water, can I get it in America? What's the tonic, man? Coconut jelly. Ah, it's a builder. Can I get it in America? I remember when I was young, I was healthy and very strong. But now I'm feeble and weak, my knees keep a knocking when I walk the street. What I need? Ah, coconut jelly. It's a builder. Ah, what's a tonic, man? Jelly. Ah, good for me belly.
Wait, you know what's going down tomorrow?
Nobody, what happening?
Joe bringing these knives to school? He could do Junior in?
For what?
Wait, he fooled with Joe girl?
Mother sick. And you know Junior don't bark down for nothing. So that means he got a big fight tomorrow.
So whose side you on?
Side? I trying to stay in school, not Simpson fan. We gotta tell somebody about this fight.
Tell somebody? I ain't no snitch. I mean cool, you know.
Wait, if you so cool, then you need to stay in school and stay out of the fight.
Yeah, but if I don't hang on Joe's side, him and he boys coming for me next.
All right, so we definitely gotta tell somebody. We gotta prevent the fight.
What I say, I don't want nobody call me snitch.
We could just call Crime Stoppers. You could report what you know, and nobody gotta know it's you.
So how do I avoid?
All you gotta do is call them, or you text them through the Crack Crime Bahamas app, and nobody can know it's you.
Then the police come looking for me for more info, and when they finish with them, Joe them coming looking for me?
When you call Crime Stoppers, the calls go directly to Miami, and they don't ask nothing about you. Then you can get the pen from them, and they can claim a reward later using that same pen.
Plus, everything's scrambled, so nobody can read what you're saying.
Calls 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
For fast, reliable, and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located at the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM.
Big fight in Bain Town. Somebody tripped Mary down. And everybody know Mary don't take no mess. She roll until she find a tree. Struggle up on a busted knee. Tuck away her queen size cotton dress. Who did her wrong? She did not know. But somebody start laughing. So Mary starts swinging left and right. Mary just one gal, that's true, but she big enough to be a zoo, and it's a sin what she would do in a barroom fight. You better run, corporal turner, run, run.
Yeah, you better run. And that's exactly what they were doing at the Olympics. Persons were running, jumping, throwing. At least from our perspective, they were swimming. All other stuff was there, but we're mostly focused on track and field. So what I saw from the Olympics was controversial, carried a lot of controversy. Persons were getting into religious issues and so on and so forth. But beyond that, there were some spectacular performances on the track. Certainly, we saw the emergence from the Caribbean of athletes who won medals for countries that have never won before. And interestingly, those medals were in the main gold medals. So Julian Alfred from St. Lucia won the 100 meter. The athlete from Dominica, I think, won the triple jump female. And those were fantastic things for a country, small countries on this side of the pond, to actually medal and to be Olympic champion, fantastic stuff. And so we had a lot to cheer about, even though there were the disappointments across the board for some of the perennial favorites. Jamaica did not do well by its own standard. The Bahamas obviously didn't do well because there was no medal. Usually there's always at least one medal. We have seen two gold medal in a particular Olympics before. And so, there was it was kind of like a moment of reflection. But to be very clear, let me pause here and give a shout out to my favorite track fan, fellow track enthusiast, Camilla Cartwright. It's one person I absolutely love to discuss track and field with in the Bahamas, for a number of reasons. One, she's very objective, she's very clear, she's knowledgeable, and she does not get into the emotional stuff. Call it like she sees it, and in many instances, not in the way some persons would like, but truth is truth, and I love her for that. So just want to give her a shout out. We have been back and forth interacting, not just when there are major events, because that's one of the complications I find with having discussions around track and field. A lot of persons only come out when there is a global event. So world championship, there is Olympics, or maybe even at the junior level, there is the CARIFTA. And then otherwise, they're just not there because they believe the track season is only those events. And they don't watch the meets, the Diamond Leagues, so on and so forth. They don't follow the students while they are at school, the NCAA championships, and so on and so forth. And so oftentimes, persons have a skewed view of what the performance or the potential performance of an athlete may be. They obviously, you want your country to win, or the country that you like best. And so you kind of root for that individual. And if someone would say, I didn't expect that person to win, you say, why wouldn't you? You're not patriotic, you're not supportive, that sort of a thing. But track and field is kind of deeper than that. You have to follow performances. Sometimes individuals who were good is just having a bad season or get an injury at the wrong time. We see that with Sherika Jackson out of Jamaica. We saw Shelly-Ann Fraser, who never started her season until actually, I think her first race was in the Olympics itself. And so, there were individuals who had great expectations for what she was going to do. After all, she's Mommy Rocket, and she always pull one out of the bag. I didn't have such an expectation. I knew that Sherika Jackson was injured more than her coaching staff or handlers were saying. And so we, lessened the expectation. On the side of the Bahamas, there was hope that the defending champion, Stevie Gardner, would be able to run. But he too was having some problem. We knew that going in. Well, at least some of us knew that. We knew that Shawnee Miller was injured. She's always going to go out there and show herself to be the warrior that she is. But the expectations of her medaling was going to be It was going to be challenging. You know, there were some fantastic, fantastic athletes in this year's Olympics who were just like peaking at the exact right time. And if you were carrying a needle in injury someplace, you just wasn't going to measure up. Plus, given the fact that, you know, athletes these days are keeping their eyes on the money. The truth is, reality is, persons are no longer going to go to the Olympics and run their legs off so you see them bandaged from head to toe. And then right after the Olympics, there's the Diamond League where all of the money is and they miss out on that. It's just a fact of the business that they are in. And athletes are way, way, way more aware of their value on that side of the competition. And so, you know, we enjoyed what we enjoyed. We were disappointed in the moments that we were disappointed. We celebrated those, especially from the Caribbean, who shone through. There were some surprises, yes. We saw performances come through. The young man out of Grenada, I think he was participating in the decathlon, did well. And so that, for me, was, you know, one of the lessons to take away. There are going to be seasons in which there's going to be plenty, and there are going to be seasons when there's not going to be plenty. And so you have to get to the place where you learn to celebrate all of those moments. Because life isn't just the bad times or the good times. It's a combination of all of those things. And so we have to really now start to think about, you know, what have we done wrong, if anything was done wrong? Where are we lacking, if there are any areas of lacking? And what do we have to build on? So while some persons were, you know, really lamenting the performance of the Bahamas, for example, and there's clearly things there to be lamented. I'm not saying that that isn't the case. I choose to kind of take a deeper dive into what was on the screen. And what I saw on the screen this time compared to even the times before when a medal was won by, say, a Shawnee Miller or a Steve Gardner or, say, the 4x4 relay, is the fact that there was a number of very, very young athletes on the track performing for the Bahamas. And a few of those actually made it to their semifinals. I think the individual who stood out the most to me is Charisma Taylor, as an athlete participating in two disciplines, the triple jump and the hurdles. Fantastic. There is huge, huge talent out there for the future. The young man who represented in the 110-meter hurdles, also very good talent. I do not remember the name, but there's a young man in the 200-meter for the Bahamas, which I think is going to do some, he's going to represent well in the future, you know, proper training, staying with the program and so on. So rather than lament all of the things that went wrong, you know, kind of look for what was there. The relays, which carried some controversy going into the Olympics, that's the mixed relay, didn't advance. And so there was the chance of a medal went away with that. But then again, look at the squad. Look at the squad which performed. The stalwarts weren't available, and the Bahamas was able to put some younger athletes in between the lines, and they were able to run the race. They didn't. And so the takeaway from there is, you know, as many of us know, that the talent is readily available. Lots of talent there, just need to be unearthed and just need to be smooth. Get these people, get them the support, get them into college if that's necessary. Start some sort of semi-professional circumstance situation here. Copy some of what's happening in Jamaica, and the future is going to be bright. The future is going to be bright. One big takeaway from the Olympics for me came from Jamaica, in that for the most part, the track athletes just didn't turn up this time at all. So I think Jamaica had 6 medals, and only two came from track. And that was the 100 meter silver. That would have been Kishane Thompson and Broadbent in the 110 meter hurdles. He got a bronze medal. But interestingly, still end up with six medals, including a gold medal for the discus. Never happened before. What that says to me is, and should be instructive for not just Jamaica, but certainly the Bahamas and the rest of the Caribbean, is that there is sufficient talent within the region to win in these, you know, kind of non-traditional eras. Field events don't usually bring medals home for most countries. It did for Dominica, certainly did for Jamaica in terms of gold medals. Jamaica has been successful in grabbing some medals in field events in other areas, never gold medals, some of the lesser placing. But it does say that we have this huge, broad talent right here in the region, which we need to leverage. One of the reasons I am kind of focusing on the track and field, or the field events, is we only like people who run and run fast. Once you get some time beyond the 400 meter, we kind of don't like you. 800 meter, maybe, but that's kind of too slow for us. Kind of like a bit too boring. We like the 100 meter persons who fly, the 200 meters persons who fly. We love the 400 meter for sure. We love the relays. We'll take any other track event, but we do not pay as much attention to field events, broadly speaking, or let me put it differently, compared to the support and the attention given to track. Sometimes the field events is not like that. I saw one athlete from Jamaica who really, she kind of just lost it and basically said, well, you're not supporting me. And one would think that, a powerhouse like Jamaica doing its thing all the time would give, great support to these athletes, but she was lamenting, we're not getting that support. In recent years, the Bahamas has done significantly well, certainly at the junior level in the throw. We had, I think her name is Altimore, not sure the pronunciation, but she was in the Olympics with a javelin. And we all know of the great legacy left by Miss Eve in terms of javelin for many, many years for the Bahamas. And so it was good to see a female representing at that level. She didn't make it out of the cut, but if you listen to the interview that she gave, it was really, really positive. She wasn't like glum. It was a good season for her. She recognized that she didn't make it this time. Some things didn't go right, but she was going to take that as a platform and build going forward. And that, I think, was some huge things to take away. So overall, in terms of medals, disappointing for the Bahamas. Overall for medals, certainly for Jamaica, disappointing. They were projecting north of seven. They got six, but I'm sure they were counting more medals for track. Didn't happen. We have to be so happy for Julian Alfred out of St. Lucia winning the 100 meter and coming back in the 200 meter to play second. Great work. We have to also be happy for the young lady out of Dominica, forget her name, pardon me, but did absolutely extremely well. And so there were those moments from a Caribbean perspective. And then when we look across the landscape and we kind of, look at those person from us who were representing in other places, it was fantastic. From Jamaica, there was one young lady, name miss me again, who is from the Bahamas. I understand her father, she's not from the Bahamas, but her parentage. Her father used to be a reporter, I think, at ZNS. And so, all over the world, we are being represented regardless of the fact that these persons are representing other countries. So there were lots of things to take away. And so as we look forward to World Championship and we look forward to the Diamond Leagues and the ongoing track and field events, you know, there's much to be positive about. It's not doom and gloom, disappointed, yes, but lots of stuff to go forward. And then in a broader sense, right, we cannot and could not ever miss in this particular Olympics the larger-than-life personality of Noah Lyles. Great athlete, the third fastest athlete over the 200 meter, 19.31. The only other two persons who have run faster than him is Usain Bolt and Ewan Blake. So he's a fantastic athlete. A lot of people don't like him. And for good reasons. I personally don't have an issue with him other than the fact that he talks a little bit too much and seemingly not a very confidential individual based on, you know, he got some information, maybe a little bit of pillow talk, and he went out and he spoke about it. I think that's not cool. But he has a vibe. He bring an energy to track and field, which, you know, to a large extent, Usain Bolt was that leader. I find it very interesting that at a time when Usain Bolt was, you know, performing his antics, we just used to love him to death. But now that Noah Lyles is doing it, we don't like him. That said, it's always good to be able to, when you brag, when you say things, you need to be circumspect. One of the biggest statements that came out of this Olympics was the interview after the 100 meter when asked, you know, if there was a threat from a particular athlete. Noah Lyles simply says, no, that man isn't going to win. As a matter of fact, when I come off the corner, every single one of them is going to be depressed. And then when that 200 meter came to bear, and he came off the corner, I can tell you he was ultra depressed. Because there were a lot of persons in front of him. He was running in third for a very long time. Kind of made up some ground, but certainly wasn't going to win. The story after that was he had COVID, but they saw him in a club right after that dancing. The issue is, for me, is that it's cool to be braggadocious. It's cool to, you know, express your showmanship in whatsoever arena you are. It's cool to be confident. As a matter of fact, it's important to be confident. It's important to have a level of confidence in your ability. And sometimes you need to display that because, you know, sometimes you have to get into the head of the opponents, you know, plant a seed of doubt. It works. But you need to be humble. You need to show humility and respect. And if and when you are not successful, you need to take your beating like a man or a big woman. Big man, big woman. And you need to not make excuses. Because the truth is, based on the explanation, the antics which Noah Lyles performed up front before the race, if he was really, really concerned about COVID, and as we know, many of us know, who would have contracted COVID, the impact that it has on your breathing, you don't do that. You would try to conserve your situation. So we saw that. Got humbled by Tobogo, the young man out of Botswana, who is a really, really special talent. Being so from junior, he was world junior champion. I think he had the record or was close to it. I think he's a record holder. But certainly, one for the future. And an individual who has such a dynamic range in terms of his performances, runs the 100 meter very well, does excellent at the 200 meter, can run the 400 meter, as we saw where he participated in his country's 4x400 meter, and he does the 4x1 too. He treated Paris 2024 like it was a sports day. and came away with 2 medals, 1 gold and 1 silver. Not bad for a little man from known as the schoolboy from Botswana. So what are some of the lessons that we take from that? Certainly, as we reflect on Noah Lyles and his antics, without, you know, asking him to diminish his confidence, a little bit of being humble. As it relates to the performance of the young man out of Africa, we see where the successes are being spread wider and farther around the world. It's not just the United States which is dominating anymore. It's not just sprinters from Jamaica which is dominated, had a whole maybe a decade or and a bit of great dominance with the presence of Usain Bolt and Ewan Blake and before them Asafa Powell, who was never really a big feature at any global event. Noah Lyles recently called him a choker. In a way, it's true. But, you know, he just never, ever translate his great talent to the big events. Usually on the one race, he was always a fantastic runner. So we saw that, but we see the wealth is being spread more around the world. And so there's greater access to, obviously, better training, better technology, and greater athletes or greater talent, the talent which may have suffered for lack of support in various places. It's coming through. I want to highlight 2 athletes, Julian Alfred and Zarnell Hughes. Both athletes are from the Caribbean, the rest of the Caribbean, but kind of honed their skills in Jamaica. And I think there is a point to be made in terms of looking around for centers of excellence. There's too much talent within the region for us to become over-patriotic with what we are doing, or to, you know, live behind these silos or Chinese wall. We now need to start thinking, how can we better leverage whatsoever has been developed and proven elsewhere to make the Caribbean that much better? The Bahamas is demonstrating, and kudos to the individuals, the handlers and the athletes from the recently completed swimming meet. The Bahamas is showing, certainly at the junior level, that it has a special program for swimmers. And why is it, therefore, that the rest of the Caribbean or persons from other areas of the Caribbean may not be able to benefit from that, while in the same way that athletes from the Bahamas who do track and field may wish to go and benefit from something elsewhere? Maybe where the throwers are coming from. We see here javelin has emerged as a spark in the Bahamas. Except for, I think, the young man out of Trinidad who won gold, two Olympics ago. We generally do not have any type of a great javelin performance within the region. Why can't the Bahamas, under the coach, I don't know the name of the coach, but the individual who certainly guided the most recent Carifta champion, why can't there be a center of excellence? And the truth is, there's money to be made, lots and lots of money to be made. We need to now start thinking about track and field really more than just, you know, for the country. And the question is, how can we expand and extend so that that business part of the games, the events, the various discipline can flow wherever the greatest impact is going to be? If the Bahamas is a center for throwing, certainly for high jump and that type of a thing, then it should be here. And persons from the region should come and should participate and increase the competition. And then when the time comes, go back and represent their countries, go on the Diamond League and make whatever money they can make. But It could be it. For swimming, yes. Maybe by bringing in persons from the rest of the region as a part of academy of swimming, maybe that will increase the competition and we will see greater transitioning of persons from the junior to the senior level. Because while the junior level has been good, great, significantly record-breaking, way, way better than most other countries, all other countries for that matter, in the region at the junior level, we are not yet seeing that great transition of persons moving into the senior level. And that's the next step. And maybe greater competition, different competition will help that. And what can we say, and this is my last point on the Olympics, the men 4x100 meter United States. It seemed like it happens every single time. Great speed, great talent, but just simply can't put it together. And one of the things to take away from that is teamwork. It's not any four persons put together that makes a great team. The moment that Noah Lyles had his circumstance and say, my Olympics is done, that team was disrupted. They had to make adjustments. And that adjustment, I believe, cost them a gold medal because they had the talent, man for man, to really have won that race. The start was excellent. There was an excellent start. The second leg runner, don't know where he was going, just moved off way too early. The guy chased him down, ran out of the zone. But when we look on these things and we ask ourselves a question, you know, how are we functioning as team? Do we gel together? And in many instances, individually, we are highly capable. We are doing the right things. We have the capability and the capacity to do the right things. But when we come together as team, we are not functional. And many of the challenges that we face, many of the missteps that we experience in personal life, in organizational or institutional life, in national life, is simply because sometimes the teams just don't click. It's often because sometimes the best talent that we have is unavailable. Sometimes the best talent is not made available. I honestly believe, this is my view, not, you know, don't take me up too much on this. I honestly believe that Noah Lyles didn't have COVID. I don't think so. And I honestly believe that because the 200 meter went the way it did, he just didn't want to do anything else. He came there with the idea that he was going to win four gold medals. And that fourth medal would have been a function of he had won the gold in the 100 meter, if he had won the gold in the 200 meter, and then in the 4x1, he would have used that as a basis to lobby the rest of the track USA to put him in the 400 meter. And I think they would have won, regardless of who is in that. The rest of the other three legs would have been fantastic. And he's fast enough, maybe strong enough to do that. But because he took his skills away from the rest of the team, they falter. So as an individual, we have an obligation to make sure that when we have the ability to do things, regardless of the circumstance, regardless of how we may feel battered, we may not be living, we may not be meeting all of the expectations that we set for ourselves. Maybe somebody is kind of, you know, battering us around the back. Somebody is kind of holding us back, putting a little bit of a, you know, challenge in front of you, a little bit of a hurdle, obstacle. Regardless of that, make yourself available. The team is dependent on you. The country is dependent on you. So we watched the Olympics, we enjoyed those that we enjoyed, we lament those that we lament, we were disappointed in eras, but overall, at the end of the day, we have to now start to look at how do we build for the future. And there's work to be done. Lots of work to be done. Certainly for the Bahamas, there's a good crop of athletes coming behind. We know that for Jamaica, they likely are going to reorganize. And, you know, we saw races, the 4x100 meter with, you know, 19-year-olds representing. That's a good sign. A lot of teenagers represented for the Caribbean this time around. So that's good. They technically have like maybe 4 Olympics in their legs. That's a good thing. So we want to say to all of the persons out there who watched and were disappointed, look for the positive in what was there. Look for the upside of what didn't go well. And think about maybe the areas which could have been supported more prior to the Olympics, which didn't get that support, and how we can rearrange ourselves and reform and do some things differently to make sure that the next go-round, the country is in a better position. We'll have to end here on this by shouting out to Devin Charlton, who represented well, made it to the final, placed fifth or sixth. But she's an athlete who I have a huge amount of respect for. Great, deep admiration for this simple reason. She goes about her business very quietly. It's always clear that she's giving you as much as she can. She don't hold back. She don't play around. She don't get into any wrangling. She don't get into the debates. She just represent and leave it all there on the track. She's the world record holder for the indoor event, indoor version of the event. And so we just, I think they were 60 meter, yeah? So we just have to say kudos to the entire team. You tried your best. For those who gave 100%, cool. If you didn't, you know yourself. Next time around, you got to do different. But certainly, I think Devin Charlton stood out as a beacon of inspiration. Went to the final. Very, very fast final. You, on that particular day, you had to be at your absolute best. Very fast. 12:36, placed third. Yes. So we salute them. We salute all the athletes. We salute all of the persons who were coaches, who participated, who did whatsoever, played any particular role. And we say to those who have the power, the authority, the mandate, to look closely at what was, what could be, and let's get to work on that. And not simply build for the next Olympics or the next World Championship. We need to have a long view of what track and field could represent, and the other events, swimming, so on and so forth, could represent for the Bahamas, for the region. There is millions and millions and millions of dollars on the global table. And I believe that with the legacy that the Caribbean has in terms of athletes' performances, it's about time we start to take more of that money off the table. So we're going to leave that discussion there as it relates to the Olympics. We take a break, and when we come back, we're going to jump into this whole issue of reform. Are we going about it in the right way? You listen to The Essentials, The Reset on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Don't move. Come right back.
Everybody's out there on the dock, they're doing what we call Bahama Rock. Yeah, oh yeah, Bahama Rock. Early in the morning till late at night, everybody's happy, no one's at night. Early in the morning till late at night, everybody's happy, no one's at night.
rock from sun to sun, and then we give her a brand new song.
You try to rest, but roll with the best. For all your printing needs, there ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers, for window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located at the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Loss of family members is very isolating, and people who have experienced loss appreciate when others have shared their grief. If you can't be there in person, go to the Nassau Guardian's website online at thenassauguardian.com and visit our obituary link. The Nassau Guardian's interactive obituary link allows you to read the funeral announcement, express condolences, or place photos on the online guestbook for one full year. Losing a loved one is painful, but that pain isn't the worst thing to happen. Friends, loved ones, colleagues, and neighbors who ignore the loss compound the pain. Should the bereaved family wish to place the obituary and photos on our obituary site, just contact the Guardian's funeral industry partners or the Nassau Guardian. Remember, there isn't one magic right thing to say to someone experiencing loss that will make the loss less painful or easier to bear. The Nassau Guardian's obituary link, available online at thenassauguardian.com.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM.
I'm not settling, so many did before me. I'm not settling, yeah. Oh, I'm not settling. I deserve the best, not going to live my life like the rest. I'm not settling, I deserve the best. Absolutely no opinion, no contest. I'm not settling, I deserve the best. Not going to live my life like the rest. I'm not settling, I deserve the best. Absolutely no opinion, no contest, hey. So many people want the status quo. Why they settle, I don't know. So many options, so many choices, but so many voices who want you to believe that you can't achieve, but you're gonna make it if you don't settle. Yeah, I'm not settling.
Welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards. As we listen to Mr. Clark says, I'm not settling. Why so many people want to settle for the status quo? One very important issue which is before the country at this point in time, as a result of a release by the Free National Movement for the most part. But certainly that's not the genesis of the issue. It was always out there. There have been a number of discussions around that. And it really stems from the idea of fees being charged by financial institutions. Now, I used to work at a financial institution. I understand banks need to be profitable. The banks have an operational system. They provide services. They provide convenience and so on and so forth. And all of that have to be paid for some way, somehow. So what I'm about to say is not in any way being anti-bank or pro the persons who put out the proposal. It's really to ask ourselves to kind of, let's reanalyze the situation. Let's ask ourselves some questions and see if we can draw some truths, or at least draw some conclusions. So my first question would be, forget about what was proposed and what the feedback was in that direction. My first question is, do you think, are you of the view, is there a position that there needs to be reform in the banking system? That's a general statement. Not reform as it relates to fees, reform generally. Think about that for a second. Does the financial sector need reform? My answer to that, I would come down on the side of yes. So, if you accept my position that yes is a reasonable answer, it then leads us to what, which era, and to what extent. Now we have before us this issue of fees. And the main call, I believe, by not only what the FNM put out recently, but other persons. And we've seen this repeated not only here in the Bahamas. We have seen overtures coming from Barbados with Mia Motley. The video went around and persons made comments like, you know, why can't we borrow this prime minister? I've heard persons say that this woman is leading and she's doing. She made the same arguments and lots of people cheer. And similar arguments are made locally, and then people, the same people who cheered, no longer cheer. So the question is, let's take the fees. And I'm going to throw a scenario out to you. So I don't have a lot of money. So if I have $1,000 in the bank, that $1,000 that I put in the bank is actually an arrangement. I am lending my $1,000 to the bank. I'm not giving the bank my money to keep safe. I am lending my $1,000 to the bank in return for an interest. That's kind of the core of what banking is. Now, you know, there are other things that in terms of modern banking, you know, you have private banking and all of that sort of stuff, where these things are clearly fee-based. And commercial banking has migrated to that. There are a lot of fees in the system. But at the core of the banking process, the intermediation, it is, I lend you my $1,000. I expect that when I want it back on demand, you give me back my money. But as long as you keep it, you're going to pay me interest on that. And for the most part, the way I understand that you will get the money to pay me is that you're going to take my money and lend it to somebody else. And because you're going to do that, you are going to earn, you the bank, is going to earn interest. And then from that, collectively, when you make your profit, you're going to pay me some. Now, we do understand that in this moment, interest rates are extremely low. Yeah, we understand that. So whatsoever the interest rates are on the board or whatsoever it is that the bank is offering, by default, that's the agreement we have. I'm going to lend you my $1,000 and you're going to give me 0.1% interest. You know, pretty much no money. But that's the arrangement. I accepted that when I put the money there. Now, different persons will look at it and say, you know, don't keep your money under your mattress. It's safer in the bank. Yes, for sure. But really, you're not giving the bank your money for safekeeping. If you want your money to be kept safe, you go to the bank and you rent a safe deposit box and you put your physical cash in it. But it does serve a dual purpose. But you lend in the bank your money. So what is happening now from a consumer perspective only, and I'm speaking as a consumer, is that my $100 will stay in the bank for a year, and each month I'll get a bit of an interest, or each quarter, whatever the period is. And as I track my statement, I am seeing that the interest that I'm getting is extremely minuscule compared to, and again subject to the transactions that I may perform, the fees which have been charged. So effectively, that relationship which I expected to kind of come out maybe on top in an ideal circumstance have been flipped on its head because of the fees. And I'm now paying the bank to keep my money. As the basis for setting out a hypothesis for discussion or a thesis for discussion, that requires some explanation. But we understand it. We know exactly what is happening. The banks need to find means to maintain their profitability. So, if the argument we made up front, that primarily the bank is supposed to take my money and then lend it to somebody, and that's the major source, traditionally, where income is coming from, then why is that not happening? And is it not happening the main reason why fees are increasing? And this question for me draws attention to a very much broader issue. So when we talk about reforms, when we talk about the bank need to be reformed, or we need to look at fees and so on and so forth, there is a huge, more significant, a gargantuan issue which is sitting out there. And that issue is attached to the question, why isn't the banks lending more? And that question is not an accusation at the bank. It's a pure, unadulterated question which asks, why aren't banks lending more? Because having worked at a financial institution or just simply observing, I am of the view that if the bank can lend, if the bank is comfortable in lending, in accepting the credit risk which are placed in front of it, it will lend. And the statement here doesn't mean that the bank absolutely don't lend any money. That's not the case here. The case is, compared to the past, is the banks collectively lending at the same level as they used to be? And it would seem that that is not the case. And we can draw, I don't want to use the word empirical because that has been thrown out. But we can draw some conclusion from a couple of things which are readily available to us. Over the last couple of years, banks in the Bahamas have had record liquidity. And that hasn't changed much in recent times. So the bank have money which they're not lending. That's why they have high liquidity. So we can then conclude that the banks are not lending as robustly as they should. I saw a document today, and it outlined some points based on some work which was done by a local think tank. And one of the items highlighted says, bank fee represent a greater portion of core income than traditional sources of loan and credit, i.e., the banks are making more money from fees than from lending. That, to me, goes to a root circumstance. Somebody needs to be asking a fundamental question. If we have a banking system in which the core income is more from fees than from lending, how does this affect the wider economy? How does this affect economic growth? How does this impact the ambitions and the policy direction that the government have for the country? When you put that within the context of a capital market, which is in some instances sophisticated, but certainly at kind of the lower and the mid-tier, not always very available. When you put that lack of lending within that context and you ask yourself, where is entrepreneurial ambitions getting funded if the lending isn't there? And so my point here is simply this. Yes, any proposal that will impact any private institution being proposed by any public entity needs careful consideration, needs to be studied, need to be understood, because a lot of times there are unintended consequences. We don't discount that at all. But there are some aspects of things which need to be done, which are just plain common sense and requires no study. Like, I want you to tell me how I can understand transparently why your fees are more than your fees from your customers are more than income from interest. And that's not knocking an institution. That's a recognition, or at least it ought to be this. It's not a battle between an entity or the government, or if the opposition become the government and the banking institution. It's not that, or it ought not to be that. It must be a recognition that banks in a country is a fundamental and important element in the growth and the development of that country. And consequently, whatsoever it does or not do ought to be subject to at least questions by policymakers. It's natural. I think everyone on both sides, both the private sector and the public sector, should accept that position. And so if something is happening, then questions should be raised. Because if no questions are being raised, then certainly somebody at least is not doing their job. Now, when reforms are called for, it doesn't mean that the idea which is proposed in the first instance necessarily will fly ultimately in the end. But if we go back to where I start, the question is there a need for reform? Does one have a view that, for example, the financial ombudsman office is effective, is properly funded, has done anything of significance for consumers within financial services? Does anyone believe that? I think if you're honest, the answer is clearly no. Not there yet. Maybe moving in the direction, thinking in the right direction, but not there, underfunded. So that's a critical aspect of the reform. Does anybody believe that the central bank should have a bit more say from a consumer protection point of view? Definitely. We see it in other places. Do they currently have the ability and the power and the authority to do that to the extent that this particular circumstance put forward? No. So that would require some reform. Should a consumer like me with $1,000 in the bank be concerned that I have a fee of, say, $5 or $6 per month or per quarter compared to 34 cents interest over the same period? Should I be concerned? Of course, because if I do nothing with that $1,000, if I do absolutely nothing with that $1,000, given enough time without change, given enough time, the fact that the amount of fees which is coming out is multiple times the interest that I'm earning. And I'm not, you know, this is a small number, so it would take a long time, but work with me. If nothing is ever done and that continues unchanged, one day I would go to the bank and I would have $0 in there, i.e. my $1,000 that I put in the bank would be gone regardless of the fact that I am earning interest simply because I'm just paying out multiple percentages of the said interest from the money I put in there. And if that doesn't trigger a need for somebody to look and ask questions and have a conversation, because a lot of times when these things are proposed, I believe that the conversations should be had with the requisite organization. So the Clearing Bank Association and the opposition party or the government or whichever entity represents the public interest should have those conversations. Sometimes the things which are said in the news, in the press, could be avoided if the conversations were had up front. Now, I'm not proposing that anything was done wrong or right. That's really not my purview. I am saying to you, I am putting forward to you, are we having the right conversations? Because sometimes the way we go about prosecuting certain things, it leads you naturally to a point, depending on which party you support, that, oh, this should be, or on the other side, it shouldn't be. And that may not be the case. If in this instance you buy the arguments of the Clearing Bank on the surface, because if you listen to the very brilliant Gowon Bo, and when Gowon speaks, you have to listen to him very carefully. Gowon never ever did say that there isn't a need for reform. He didn't say that. Never did say that. He said some other things, and you can agree or disagree with him, but he didn't say that. But depending on how you are listening, you may draw the conclusion that none is needed. And that's not the case. Or on the other side, you may draw the conclusion that here is persons seeking to, in an unfettered way, interfere with private concern, which is antithetical to free market system. And that could be the result depending on how that is implemented. But certainly, I would not think, I hope, that that's not the intention. And the persons are seeking to create an environment where there is greater transparency, where the depositor who has been held up as an individual who could be hurt in this process of unfettered interference can also be held up as an individual who is being hurt in some ways, depending on sometime the level that he has in there. Because if you have a whole ton of money, big money, sometimes the effect, you're not going to feel it. But you're an average man with average savings and your transactions, you may have multiple transactions and you're paying, you know, $10 per month and getting 75 cent interest. Something wrong with that. that's uncomfortable. In a very generic way, in a very, very generic way, and I know it can be argued differently. You know, if you ask me to argue for the bank, I'm going to say to you, well, you know, I'm giving you an ATM, I'm giving you online banking, I'm giving you extra convenience. I have to support that by technology, so on and so on and so forth. And that's why I'm charging you. Cool, that's fine. I would anticipate that your next natural question is, okay, I agree with you. You have to charge me. Are you charging me too much? Is the amount you charge me just about right? Help me understand that. And I would hope that when we speak of transparency in terms of the fees and the reform, that's kind of where we're going, to kind of say to ourselves, is the consumer being treated properly? Is somebody taking a little bit more than is necessary as a means of balancing the books, for want of a better word? So if we agree that that circumstance exists and there is not that clear understanding, then there must be a little bit of a flux. And the question is, how do you get that answer? If there isn't a mechanism right now to do that easily, officially, then there is a requirement for reform. If that mechanism doesn't exist, and I'm not saying that it doesn't, because I believe that answers can be gotten from the entities involved. But if it is totally voluntary, like if you ask and say, I'm not giving it to you, then what? Then reform would be required. So when we step back from the specifics of what is being dealt with and ask broader questions as to what is needed or if anything is needed, the answer become a little bit clearer and certain things start to emerge. Like, yeah, definitely there is a need for reform. And then we start to ask the question, what type of a reform and to what extent? And then we need to then take that to a different level to say, how can we do this without being disruptive and damaging to the institutions in the first instance and at a broader level, the economy? So I would hope, I would wish that whatsoever has been said is not being dismissed out of hand, but is seen as a first hit, first pitch, a first proposition of a need which actually exists. And also, that the call for reforms should be seen within context. And the context is, look around the region, look around the world. What is happening in other jurisdictions? What jurisdictions? What are the things being called for by governments from different places? Canada, a recent article that I saw, Canada is looking at the fees of banks, and they even have them labeled as junk fees. Now, don't necessarily know what all of that entails, but the word junk is self-explanatory. You put in something on individuals which ought not to be there. I'm not saying by any way, shape, or form that that has been done here in the Bahamas. I would not expect that to be the case. But do we know that for sure? Do we know that the fees which have been charged are reasonable? Can they be curtailed? Can someone, after laying out the rationale of all of the investments which are required, technology and so on and so forth, does the increase in fees justify that? Like, in the instance when you chase me off of the line and say, you can't go to the teller, which I'm quite comfortable doing. I'm comfortable going to the teller and spending 2 hours to get my $100. But you chase me off the line and say, if you're trying to get less than $500, you have to go to the ATM and then you charge me. Something about that is not right. You can't tell me that my money, the money I lent you, I can't get it back by walking up to the teller that you put there to give me back my money. You chase me to the ATM and then charge me premium rate or charge me more. It's not right. So it's from that perspective I believe that we need to start looking at things and asking ourselves the question, you know, how is the ordinary Bohemian citizen, the ordinary Bohemian resident, the ordinary individual who interacts through banks as part of the overall economic arrangement of the country, are they being treated fairly? And if the question, the answer to the question is yes, then that's the end of that. If the answer to that question is yes, and that answer will emerge as a result of there being transparency. If the question or the answer cannot emerge, then there isn't. So if in this moment one makes the argument that no reform is required and that can be achieved, then go right ahead and have the information. And those who are calling for it, sit with those who are giving it. And when the conclusion is drawn, say to the rest of the people, everything seems okay here. There's much ado about nothing. But if that's not the case, then there's a need for reform. And reforms may not necessarily be huge, big, humongous things. It may be just one simple thing. Maybe an administrative change here. Maybe a clause which is necessary in a piece of legislation. Take 2 minutes to write, half a day to debate, and it's done. It could be as simple as that. But the fact of the matter, if you go back to the scenario I laid out, which, you know, may be a little bit extreme because, you know, the calculation would need, you know, at $5 plus, it would take you many, 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 many moons to kind of erode $1,000. But the fact is my money is being eroded. And it's been eroded at a faster rate than, well, it's been eroded because the fee is larger than the interest which I'm getting, which I think is, despite the fact that I did lend you at a very low interest rate, largely because of excess liquidity in place. So I can't quarrel about that. But the circumstance is I'm paying you to keep my money so that you can take more and put it to your profit. Like I said, I am not anti-bank at all. In this instance, I'm being pro-consumer, pro-me, especially the poor versions of us. We can't afford them circumstances. But let's take it a little bit further away from the banks. And this, I think, is where policymakers should have an interest, should be concerned. For the most part, in the Bahamas, anyone who wants to build a house or get into some type of a business which involves construction or whatsoever it is, 9 out of 10 times they look into the bank. If the bank is not lending for us to be growing our housing stock, for individuals to be in a position to borrow, to start creating generational wealth, then what is happening and why are they not doing that? What exactly is wrong within the economic arrangement, why the banks are reluctant to do that? And as we know, the bank is, no matter how you one shape it. At the end of the day, the bank is just one big old risk management mechanism, which is managing risk posed by it. So it takes customers' money. My money, my deposit is a loan to the bank, and the bank does not want to lose that money. So it's not going to lend money to individuals who are unable to or unwilling to repay, if they know who are unwilling to repay. So the bank is making it's not a gut feeling. There are systems that they have, the methodologies that they apply at different levels to make a decision as to whether or not to extend credit. The question must be tickling the minds of policymakers as to why is all the banks in the Bahamas at this point in time maintaining the same high level of excess liquidity? And what implication does that have for the economic growth of the country? Housing stock. Expansion in housing stock is a critical economic factor which says you're doing well. So if on one hand, we have a significant reconsolidation of the economy, which tourism is leading, and that's something that is a feather in the cap of the country, something that we can brag about, we can boast about. But if in that environment, with record-breaking arrivals and record-breaking income, if in that scenario, this critical organ of economic activity isn't comfortable doing what it normally does traditionally, then there's a question to be asked. And so maybe, if that is the case and evidence is there, there are reforms required elsewhere. One is calling for changes within the banking system itself. But are there any changes on the public administrative side that exert negative influence, negative impact on the banking system? That exert negative impact, negative tension on the ability of individuals to be in a position to present themselves as credible, acceptable credit risk for these institutions to lend so that they can deplete this excess liquidity. So it's not a narrow question in my mind. Up to now, the way it has been discussed very narrowly. We can understand that things have to start at some place. But we must be mindful, we must always be careful to be urgent in getting to the place where the real problems lie. Because a country with a banking system with high sustained levels of excess liquidity has a problem. Something is wrong. Or maybe not something is wrong, but something is not working in the manner which is most desired. It's not. We want, ideally, the bank to have the cash because I gave them my $100. I want that $100 to be lent to Joe down the road so that he can go buy some bread and then sell those bread and go back and pay back the bank and the bank get the interest. So that at some point in time, I would love to get to the place where the liquidity in the banks have been constrained and the banks can start paying me more interest. There's greater demand for my money. They're chasing me for my money. And so they're willing to pay me a little bit more. That creates greater economies, greater economic activity. Because it says that the money that was lent to the bank by me and you and the other persons have now been lent out to other persons. And it's being used, turn around, turnover, spin around in the economy. And it's making, creating additional wealth. Working to expand the GDP. The young man now has the ability to borrow and to build a house. And because of the knock-on effects on one sector to the next, and the economy is growing and expanding, and the banks are now more comfortable lending, so there is more economic activity being sparked. Entrepreneurs are able to go out and borrow because the environment suggests that profitability, not guaranteed, but profitability is reasonable. It will come. So if we think about this as a mathematical formula with the excess liquidity sitting on one side, and it is a function of what happens on the other side, it will tell you that some of the factors on the side opposite are not working as they should, because excess liquidity should not be maintained over such a long period of time. Now, we know we have the blimp of COVID and all that sort of thing, but yeah. We want to see, therefore, the banks get to the place where their core revenue is being driven by credit activity, lending activity, as opposed to fee income, transactional. There's just something wrong with that. And it becomes natural to accept that because the funds that they have, the asset that they have available for lending and making that money is sitting there unexploited. It's just sitting there, excess liquidity. That's what it is. When you have too much money, when you have more money than you need, than you spend at this point in time, and the need would be to give it out in terms of loans. When you have too much, money gets cheaper. Interest rates will fall. And then the bank, in order to keep its operation, because remember now, right? Remember, we are asking for online banking, internet, I want to sit in my bedroom. The banks are still investing. They have this operational arrangement, sometimes huge, significant. The same one that was there 2 years before when they were lending at a vibrant rate. It hasn't changed. But now the lending isn't there, and more money. They make more money from lending than they will make from fee in an ordinary course of things. Serious. In the ordinary course of things, you will make more money from lending than you will make from fees. So when we get to the place where, when you look on an income statement and that core income of fee is more than the core income from the income from fee is more than the normal traditional core income from interest rate, something is amiss. Something is off kilter. And when I say something is amiss and something is off kilter, I don't mean at the bank level itself or the industry. I am talking nationally. And that is where I believe the conversation needs to go to. We need to ask ourselves bigger, broader questions about why are we having this disparity in terms of fee versus interest income. I think it's important. I think it's fundamental that we start to shift the conversation there. Because the moment we do that, I think we are going to be in a place where we better understand and accept that, yes, there is a need for reform. However, those reforms, as it relates to the bank, which has been called for, are part and parcel, maybe part and parcel, of broader reforms which are necessary, so as to ensure that the playing field remains level, there's no disruption, and that what's affecting the banks negatively can be corrected in the same process as the impact on the consumer from the fees are being corrected. So I think we need to rethink, relook, reassess, and be willing to re-argue collaboratively, not just in the interest of the individual consumer or the individual institution or the collective industry, but in the interest of the entire Bahamas, the entire economic arrangement, the need for economic growth, the need for expansion, the need for recognizing that even though in this moment when we have some of the best performance historically, there is still a talk about cash crunch and other challenges. This, I believe, is fundamental. And we need to solve it not simply from a micro perspective, and by micro I mean at the industry level, but let's understand what the macro impact is and where solutions need to be created from that level. And we're going to leave that there. It's food for thought. Think about it. I certainly only have words. But if there's any value in what was said, then certainly those who have the power and the authority and those who are involved actively may want to relook, rethink, readjust. You've been listening to The Essentials, The Reset. We always like to end our show by saying, do not allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. All that is left to say is, be good, walk good, one love, and Ubuntu. Good night.
Try and try. You'll succeed at last. Persecution, you must fear. Win and lose, you've got to get your share. Got your mind set on a dream. You can get it, the harder they seem now. You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. But you must try, try and try, try and try.